Blog Talk Radio.
Life, love, and wellness.
Welcome to Truthful Tuesdays. We hold them right here on Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show, every week. And I get so excited to bring you these outstanding guests that share from their storehouse of wisdom with you. And tonight is no different. We have such an incredible show lined up for you tonight. However, there's a couple of things that we do prior to getting ourselves on the way. So the very first thing that we do in all honor and gratitude is give thanks to our ancestors. Ooh, thank you, ancestors. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We thank you for being with us always, and especially on Tuesdays as we discuss issues and topics that are not necessarily talked about in an open environment. However, they're extremely important to our survival and how we maneuver our lives in this world on today, right? So because of the ancestors' strength and the power that they've shared with us, we're able to do that and to do that with pride and joy as we bring this information, this knowledge to you. So ancestors, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Oh, my God, we love you so much, just tremendously. Whew, ashe, ashe. My ancestors, man, they be having my full attention, and they don't like to let go sometimes. So the next thing that we do in preparation for our radio show is read a daily inspirational message. I am the author, and you can find this at revsandy.wordpress.com. This particular message is entitled, God Goddess Does Intervene. Like a gigantic stop sign when you are traveling down the wrong path, God Goddess will and does place a huge sign that reads, stop. Are your eyes open? The stop sign can be represented by places, people, or things. Ever think you got it all figured out and this is how you're going to do this or that? Then things begin to unfold that you do not give you much comfort or relief. You know to stop and become aware of the signs that are showing up for you. I have witnessed the signs in my life repeatedly. In the beginning, I acted like I could not see them. I was a victim and wanted people to believe that no signs were ever present, that all this stuff just happened to me, never once acknowledging that I was not reading the signs properly. When I learned to read the signs, they were all right there in front of me and along the path. I am certain now that they were there all along the way. When I refused to be controlled and led by ego and fear, then I could plainly see the signs. God Goddess can only do for us what God Goddess can do through us. Take the blinders off and open your eyes wide. God Goddess does intervene. Again, you can find that at RevSandy.wordpress.com. I guess I'm just a little excited about this show. We've had such tremendous individuals, experts that have come this month of August and shared so much with us in our subject matter of addictions for this month. It's been extremely interesting and very rewarding to get the different views, the personal experiences, the personal testimonies, and our own resident Nurse Harriet Harris is our guest speaker tonight. She's going to be bringing us the spiritual side of substance disorders and addiction. So just hold on tight to your seat. And so it's all about life, it's all about love, and it's all about wellness. So you, audience, you know you're invited to join in the discussion tonight. All comments are welcome, and our intentions is that every voice will be heard. Our call-in number here is 516-531-9819. And if you just press your 1 on your dial, that would alert us you want to speak live on air with us. To ensure the best quality of playback, a lot of our regular listeners do go back and listen time and time again. And you may decide you want to go back and listen to this particular episode again as well. So all we would like for you to do is when you're on the line and your line has been opened, if you're not speaking, if you would just simply put your phone on mute, then that would eliminate any background noise. Our mics on this this broadcast is extremely sensitive, and it picks up all the background noise going on. So thank you for that. And you can listen to any of the shows. Just log on to www.blogtalkradio.com/Sandy Rogers, and that's spelled SandyRogers. You're listening to Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. So we're going to take us a quick music break, and then when we come back, we're going to have Nurse Harriet come and join us and be on the show with us so that we can get right into the knowledge and the information that she has so lovingly prepared and come to share with us this evening. So we'll be right back.
Oh,
y'all know who that is, Mr. Smokey Robinson and the Miracles with I Second That Emotion. I just wanted something a little upbeat tonight, and I hope you guys like that. Welcome back, everyone. Welcome to Life, Love, and Wellness with Sandy Rogers Show. Once again, if you would like to call and speak live on air with us, our call-in number here is 516-531-9819. And you would just push 1 on your dial to let us know you want to speak live on air with us. And we appreciate that. Our topic today is the spiritual side of substance disorders and addiction. And once again, we have our in-house, our resident nurse, Harriet Harris, as our featured speaker tonight. And she says, before we can have a discussion on unhealthy habits, perhaps it would be wise to get additional wisdom on the subject. Tonight we bring to the microphone our beloved nurse, Harriet Harris. Nurse Harriet brings us the narrative around understanding the dynamics of addiction. Is there really sides or aspects that we may not be aware of? Like what causes it, and or can a person shift from one addiction to another? If you move from alcohol to being a religious fanatic, is that still considered addiction? Does or is addiction part of our family lineage? Is everyone addicted to something or another? So we're going to talk about that tonight, and we have the best qualified person to come in and help us with this part of the discussion around addictions, who is, once again, our resident nurse, Harriet Harris. And she's written books. She has just years and years, 40-plus years in the medical field as a nurse. And she's been working in a lot of the ER rooms, the emergency centers that come, you know, when people are in the worst possible predicament, they're taken there. And that's been her study, her field, to where she goes in and helps people. You know what I'm saying? So, Nurse Harriet, without further ado, I would love for you to come to the microphone with us and talk to us about your topic and why you chose this particular, the spiritual side of substance disorders and addiction. Welcome aboard.
Good evening.
Hey.
So glad to be here.
Yes, ma'am. I'm glad you could come.
Thank you once again for having me. I really appreciate it. And again, I want to thank you for the incredible work that you do week after week, presenting us with enlightening, helpful speakers that really do help us move forward in a more healthy way in our lives and in every aspect of our lives, really. Because you cover so many different topics and so much information that it is provided that is so much needed today. And I just want to thank you once again.
Yes, ma'am. You're welcome.
Your tireless efforts on our behalf week after week. But tonight, I want to get into the subject of addiction, as you mentioned. And this is a subject that's very near and dear to my heart, too, because I've had family members and friends who struggled with addiction over the years. And I've watched the toll that it can take on people's lives. And so this is certainly a very serious subject and a very timely subject for the day in which we live right now. Mm-hmm. Last week you asked me the question about the Purdue pharmaceutical company, whether they were related to the chicken
yes, ma'am.
Producers. I did some research on that, and actually they are sister companies.
Oh, wow. Are you kidding?
Yeah. Purdue Pharmaceutical Company, though, has declared they're in the process of declaring bankruptcy because they had a lot of lawsuits brought against them for, that associated with that medication, OxyContin. So they're in the midst of settling all those lawsuits that were brought against them by the families of those people in the Appalachian areas. And once they settle those lawsuits, according to Google, once they settle those lawsuits, that the name of that company is going to change to Knoa, K-N-O-A, Pharmaceutical.
Something entirely separate, right? Something different.
They're not going out of business. They're not going out of business totally, though, okay?
Wow.
And that's what happens a lot of times when these companies get sued. They just change the name to something else and keep it moving. Yeah.
Well, I'm certainly thankful that you brought that to our attention, because I know that and I don't know, you know, what made me ask you that last week, but I just thought it was kind of funny, you know, because it just sounded so like the chicken name, you know. So, But I appreciate you for looking that up for us, because these are things that we need to know. You know, we need to know who's related to who and who's got all these different businesses that's, you know, literally causing us damage and harm. So.
Well, the chicken producers were organized by members of that same family, though. But, you know, luckily they've not had the scandal that the pharmaceutical side has had. But, yeah, they're relating.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, let's get on to our subject tonight. And this is something that, as you know, I deal with in my book, because it is such an important subject. I dedicated an entire chapter to that and try to answer some most frequently asked questions about addiction and how important it is for the person to get into recovery. We don't call it recovered altogether, because it's a condition that will follow the person throughout their lives. But they can get into recovery and work the steps of 12-step program and actually, you know, get what we call clean and sober. But that is going to take some effort. So we're going to get into the discussion on the dynamics of how that all began many times. Let's start by saying that the abuse of substances and out-of-control behaviors such as drugs, alcohol, excesses in sex, gambling, overeating, gaming, smoking, and yes, religion may begin many times when a person was try to avoid having to deal with stress or some traumatic event or events in their lives. Drugs and alcohol, particularly because of their ability to dull the senses, become a crutch to escape dealing with something which is difficult to handle or mentally or emotionally unresolved in the person's mind. The individual may feel overwhelmed by feelings of regret or shame many times, especially if the event occurred in childhood. In childhood, the person does not possess the emotional maturity to process what has happened without help. And he or she may begin abusing drugs or alcohol to not feel the pain of the trauma. However, after using substances to cope, dependence on them may develop, beginning a lifelong cycle of addiction. And addiction is defined as engaging in any activity to the extent, or repetitively engaging in any activity to the extent that it causes our lives to become unbalanced, chaotic, and out of control. Okay? Any activity. And when I work for a drug and alcohol treatment center, this was the scenario that most addicts describe, which began their path. They may have been abused in some way, for example, by a close family member. The abuse may have gone unchecked for years while the person was being threatened with harm to themselves or to their loved ones. The child, then unable to tolerate the emotional pain they're in, may begin drinking or abusing drugs. They could also have been given drugs or alcohol by the perpetrator to manipulate them into letting the abuse happen. Many addicts reported that it was not until years later that they were able to even talk about the abuse, having squashed the emotional pain with substances for many years. But finally, in treatment, they can begin to the work of processing, understanding, and letting go of feelings of guilt, shame, and the need to hide and deny emotional pain. Okay. And, you know, I've talked about the little girl who was in my elementary school class in grades 2 through 5, and how she would come to school many times and fall asleep at school. She would suck her thumb. She would cry mm-hmm. easily. She was always, you know, depressed. And years mm-hmm. later, when I had her as a patient in the psychiatric hospital where I worked after she had tried to commit suicide, was when she and I met back up again after, you know, we both became an adult, and she admitted that she was being sexually abused by her stepfather during those years.
Wow. Mm.
And she too had developed a habit of abusing alcohol in order to sleep, in order to squash the recurring dreams and feelings, mm-hmm. you know, flashbacks of the trauma that she had suffered. So she ended up coming to the psychiatric unit after attempting suicide because her mother had passed away, and she had the additional trauma of losing her mother. But, you know, she then realized that it was that trauma that she had suffered was really responsible for how she had been abusing alcohol and unable really to move past that as long as she was continuing to abuse alcohol. And so that many times is how it starts. And then the person...
From the childhood uh-huh. problems, okay.
Right. So... So let's look at some of the facts and findings regarding addiction. According to the Center of Addiction, they describe addiction as a complex disease of the brain and the body that involves compulsive use of one or more substances despite serious health and social consequences. Addiction disrupts regions of the brain that are responsible for reward, motivation, learning, judgment, and memory. It damages various body systems as well as families, relationships, schools, workplaces, and neighborhoods. As you know, as the addiction progresses, and it is what they call a progressive disease. It doesn't get better on its own. It just gets worse as time goes on. A person drinks more and more or uses drugs more and more or, you know, whatever the particular habit is. That many times, I don't know if you ever watched that series, My 600-Pound Life. It's on one of the channels. Most times, right. And I really try to sit down so I can hear the beginning of each person's story, because most times that is how it starts out. They'll ask them because the cameras follow these people for about a year as they try to lose weight and have stomach surgery. They'll get that stomach surgery to so that they can lose weight once they've lost so much weight. And so they go see this doctor, and he, you know, puts them on a diet, and some of them actually weigh, you know, 600 and even more than 600 pounds.
Exactly.
But most of the time when they interview them and they ask, you know, well, what was going on when you first started overeating? And mm-hmm. for the most part, They'll describe some type of abuse, some type of neglect, maybe being abandoned by a parent, maybe a parent has died suddenly, you know, just some kind of trauma from their childhood where maybe then the other parent will start letting them overeat in order to compensate for, you know, to really cover the emotional pain the child mm-hmm. is going through, and they'll start letting them overeat. And as time goes on, that pleasure sensation is released. And as we know, sugar and, you know, high carbs can be so addicting. And the child just, you know, the eating just becomes out of control. And they end up, you know, being really unable to stop on their own. They, you know, need help and have to organize a support system and work with this doctor in order to finally be able to have the surgery. Some of them don't even make it to the point where they can get the surgery because they don't really lose enough weight on their own.
So it's
a struggle. It really is. Okay.
And you were saying that you made mention of the term progressive disease, and mm-hmm. so in that analogy that you're using with the food, then the parents, or I don't know, it could be a boyfriend, a girlfriend, but someone is actually providing them more and more foods or something that's unhealthy that they've become hooked on. Is that what you mean by the progressive disease?
Right. And the person,
okay.
See, the person generally has somebody who they would call codependent, meaning they will help them in their addiction. They'll mm-hmm. go out and get food for them, because I'm some of those people who weigh so much really can't even drive. They can't leave home sometimes, but they'll have people who come over, bring them food, knowing that they're not doing anything except contributing to the problem, but they have the idea that, well, she's gonna be or he's gonna be real upset if I don't get what they want at the grocery store. If I don't get a whole sheet cake for them to eat in a couple of days, that they just rationalize their thinking and say they don't want to hurt the person, they don't want to disappoint the person, they don't want to upset the person, so they just speed along, just let them go along getting whatever it is they want. But so actually, see, the person who's running those errands to the grocery store could be in there buying healthy stuff. And if the person can't get out, that's what I would do. If the person can't get out of bed, then, hey, you're going to eat what I tell you to eat until you can get up and get it yourself.
I've seen them shows you're talking about, girl, and look, ain't nobody going to be trying to argue with these people, because they and their head go to spinning on top of their shoulders and stuff. You know what I'm saying?
And see, rather than confront them and disappoint them, they don't want to hear it, so they just go ahead, go along, get along,
And
like I say, sometimes the parent has been letting them overeat from childhood, so, why mm-hmm. didn't they change at that point in time? Because, they
yep.
actually contributed
yep.
to the beginning of the problem themselves, mm-hmm. so. Sometimes they'll come to the doctor's appointment, and Dr. Nazarian, I think is his name, Dr. Now, they call him. Dr. Now will say, well, now, how is it that he's able to get all this food brought in? Are you bringing it in? And the parent
mm-hmm.
or the caregiver will sit there looking guilty, But they'll say, well,
mm-hmm.
I go buy it for him. And he tells them, no, you're going to have to stop this.
Yeah,
you're gonna have to stop contributing to the problem. If they ever gonna get help? But like I said, some never get to the point where they can get the problem, where they get into recovery. They never do. And
mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
But a few do. So it's interesting. Also that did you ever watch that series, The Book of John Gray, that used to be on the OWN channel?
I think I went to look at it once, and it didn't excite me. So no, I didn't stay with it.
It depicts this pastor. I think he has a church. Well, the last time the show ended, he had it moved his church to Greenville, South Carolina. But he describes his battle with food addiction as beginning when he was about 5 years old. He actually got sexually molested by two teenage boys in his neighborhood, right out in front of his house, as a matter of fact. He said the boys came over and sexually abused him right in the front yard. And he could see people looking out the window, the neighbors looking out the window, seeing what was happening. But nobody intervened.
Mm.
And also around that time, his parents had separated, And his around that time, his father died. But his father had used after they separated, he would come over and pick him up and take him, you know, and spend time with him on the weekends, and he would take him to eat fish and chips. So that was his favorite meal, fish and chips. And so after the dad died, you know, he never told the mother anything about the sexual abuse until after he had grown up, really. But the mother, in an effort to try to help him cope with the father's death, started letting him overeat the fish and chips. So he started to gain more and more weight, and even as an adult, was struggling with weight gain, diabetes. And didn't really realize it until he got a coach who was in Overeaters Anonymous, who helped him realize, you know, why he started out on that overeating path. And it was because of the abuse that he had suffered, and then the loss of his dad. And so once he realized, you know, what had created the problem, then he could start working on the solution to it. And that's really what it takes, is really getting real about what is motivating you to do what it is you're doing. Because, you know, they can see that it's destructive. And, you know, like those people who are 600 pounds, they can see that they're killing themselves. They just really lack the capacity, the ability to just, you know, stop it without help. They really do. And that's really what addiction is. The behavior has become out of control, chaotic, and dangerous even to the person. But they still lack the ability to stop on their own. Okay? So there's a disease model of addiction. It is defined as a disease by most medical associations, including the American Medical Association and the American Society of Addiction Medicine. They, like diabetes, cancer, and heart disease, addiction is caused by a combination of behavioral, environmental, and biological factors. Genetic risk factors, too, account for about half of the likelihood that an individual will develop addiction. So it can be associated with genetics. It's at about half of the likelihood. That could be something that the person has inherited the tendency for. Addiction involves changes in the functioning of the brain and the body. These changes may be brought on by risky substance use or may pre-exist, they say. The consequences of untreated addiction often include other physical and mental health disorders and requires medical attention. If left untreated over time, addiction becomes more severe, disabling, and life-threatening. Okay, so it's not. So it is a disease, and it actually creates changes in the brain. And they describe those changes as they say people feel pleasure when basic needs such as hunger, thirst, and sex are satisfied. In most cases, these feelings of pleasure are caused by the release of certain chemicals in the brain. Most addictive substances cause the brain to release high levels of these same chemicals that are associated with pleasure and reward. Over time, though, continued release of these chemicals causes changes in the brain system involved in reward, memory, and motivation. When these changes occur, a person may need the substance to feel normal. The individual may also experience intense desires or cravings for the addictive substance and will continue to use it despite the harmful or dangerous consequences. The person will also prefer the drug, or the person may also prefer the drug over healthy pleasure and may lose interest in normal life activity. In the most chronic forms of the disease, addiction can cause a person to stop caring about their own or others' well-being or survival. Okay. As you see, sometimes alcoholics or drug addicted people sitting on the street, laying out on the sidewalk, and it's 20 degrees outside.
Right.
They really even lose the ability to protect their own survival. These changes in the brain can remain for a long time, even after the person stops using the substances. It is believed that these changes may leave those with addiction vulnerable to physical and environmental cues that they associate with substance use, also known as triggers, which can increase their risk of relapse. Okay? Because many times you hear about people that have gone into treatment, and they might have gone in and out of there 20 times because they'll continue to relapse because the brain is triggered to go back.
So let me ask you a question in reference to that, because it was something that was told to me by this herbalist, and I really didn't take her serious when she said it. But so when I finally decided for good that I was going to stop smoking cigarettes, I just made it up in my mind and I just did it, basically. But I was trying to think of her name. The name of her store is Garden of Health, but she told me, she says, well, for every year that you smoked cigarettes, it's going to take you, I think she said something like a month or 3 months in order for you to get that completely out of your system. And I'm like, are you kidding? I said, you're just trying to scare me into making sure I stay off of them, right? She's like, no, it's the truth. So do you have any information regarding that, as far as, so is it like in your cells or in your tissues, in your muscles? Where are, like with cigarettes, where is all of these heavy metals, these toxins, where are they located in the body?
In the lungs.
Where are they hiding out? In the lungs.
In the lungs, primarily.
Okay.
And that's why, and that was correct what she told you. It's going to take some time for the body to finally throw that stuff off, because what's happening is that stuff is collecting in there, and it's actually changing the cell growth to be something different. That's how lung cancer ends up developing, because it's actually changing the way cells are developing. They're starting to develop defective. So it's gonna take some years, many times, depending on how long the person smoked, for the because you ever notice how some people who smoked years ago still have like a smoker's cough? Even though they don't smoke anymore, periodically right. you can hear that kind of rattling going around in there because they still have some defects with the lungs, with lung tissue.
But and mannerisms too, because my pastor, we were out to a luncheon or a breakfast or something, and whatever I had in my hand at the time, she's like, oh, she said, Sandy, you a smoker? And I'm like, no, but I recently quit. And I'm like, how did you know that? She said, because of how you, I don't know what it was I did, but I moved my hands like a cigarette, like a person that smokes would do, So I just thought that was really funny. Yeah. So we do have those mannerisms still,
And I've seen previous cocaine users do that little bump on the side of their nose.
Okay.
When people put cocaine up their nose and they stop doing it, I have a family member now. He would bump the side of his nose periodically, just like he's sniffing cocaine. Still doing that after so many years. He says it's been So
because it's really amazing. Go ahead.
It is. It really is. It's a long-term disorder that's why I say it has to be treated, and the person has to be in recovery for the rest of their lives. You can't ever say, well, hey, I'm recovered. I don't have that anymore. And people who have some people will tell you they've been in recovery 30 years. They haven't had a drink or haven't had any drugs, but they never say they're cured because they know that, you know, it might not be hard for them to just pick that right on back up and keep, you know, and start doing it again.
And, you know, that's been one of my little pet peeves. But I get it. I think I understand it more as I mature than I understand, because I've worked with halfway houses and other places, you know, where people were Alcoholic Anonymous, and, you know, they were doing the 12-step and things like that. And they would get up and say, my name is Sandy, and I'm an alcoholic. I haven't had a drink in 30 years, or however their introduction go. And I'll be like, well, man, ain't you finished with that? You know, if you ain't had a drink in 30 years, then I think you cured, you know. But that was always my interpretation of it, as I'm sure there may be other people that look at it like that as well. You know, like, why do they have to keep going back and saying it? But I think we've had some real knowledge shared this month that talked to that. And so thank you for bringing that up. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. The gentleman who spoke at the first of the month, as a matter of fact, he had many, many years of sobriety, but he says still he considers himself taking it one day at a time.
Yep.
Not using or drinking one day at a time, because it is a chronic disease. A chronic disease is a long-lasting condition that can be controlled but not cured. This is according to our information from the Center on Addiction. It says about 25 to 50% of the people with a substance use problem appear to have a severe chronic disorder.
Wow.
For them, addiction is a progressive, relapsing disease that requires intensive treatment and continuing aftercare, monitoring, and family or peer support to manage their recovery. But they say the good news is that even the most severe chronic forms of the disorder can be manageable and reversible, usually with long-term treatment and continued monitoring and support for recovery.
Yeah, well, you know, that's where I'm going. Yeah, everything is reversible, you know, when you put your mind to it, and your, you know, like everything you've got, your faith in the, in the belief that you can overcome it. So, you know, so many times we've talked about this before, you know, we're not in the mindset of understanding how powerful we are, you know, how the human brain is the first computer, and it's going to be the last computer, because man will never be able to completely duplicate the power that we have in our brains, you know. So I believe that with the right motivation, and that's going to be different for every person. You know, each person is going to have a different reason why they're doing something, you know, and if it's truly dear enough, you know, if it's strong enough, then they'll be able to hang on to it, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, many times, though, the addict will say that they had to hit rock bottom, meaning they've messed up all their relationships. They've lost their job. They've become, you know, life just got totally out of control. And at that point in time, they realize, hey, I got to do something else. I got to do something different here. I mean, go ahead.
Well, I'm going to ask you this question, and you can hopefully tie it in with what you were getting ready to say. So if we understand from the research that's been done that most of these addictions, or most of the reasons why people become addicted to various things, is because of some childhood trauma. Would you say that it would be best for us to monitor the children as closely as possible, and when they start exhibiting a different or a strange behavior, that we could start talking with the children at that point and possibly preventing them from being addicted to whatever they, you know, whatever their choice would be.
Right.
But
absolutely.
Do you see that as a way to look at the addiction problem, since the research is saying that it's occurred during childhood?
Yes, it absolutely. That's something we as a matter of fact, we're going to talk about that as we talk about the spiritual side of it. Because there are actually some things already going on with the person before they ever select their drug of choice. There's already some spiritual phenomena at play, and we're going to talk about those. Okay.
Okay.
But here's some frequently asked questions. Why is willpower often not enough? The initial and early decision to use substances reflects a person's free or conscious choice. Because many times people say, well, you know, he could just stop that if he wanted to. He don't have to do that. He should have the better willpower than that. It says, however, once the brain has been changed by addiction, that choice or willpower becomes impaired. Perhaps the most defining symptom of addiction is a loss of control over substance use.
Wow.
So it's not just a matter of having willpower. It may start out, you know, being a choice that the person made to use drugs or drink at the beginning. But then once the changes take place in the brain, that choice or willpower becomes impaired. So the most defining symptom of addiction is a loss of control over substance or whatever it is. Okay, and then they ask, are people with addiction responsible for their action? The answer they give is people with addiction should not be blamed for suffering from the disease. All people make choices about whether to use substances. However, people do not choose how their brain and body respond to drugs and alcohol, which is why people with addiction cannot control their use while others can. People with addiction can still stop using, however. It's just much harder than it is for someone who has not become addicted.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So they're responsible for their recovery, once their brain has been changed by the addiction. They then have to become responsible for their actions as they take to try and recover. People with addiction are responsible for seeking treatment and maintaining recovery. Often they need help and support of family, friends, and peers to stay in treatment and increase their chances of surviving and remaining in recovery. Then they ask the question, why some people say that addiction is not a disease. Some people think addiction cannot be a disease because it is caused by the person's choice or to use drugs or alcohol. While the first use or early stage use may be by choice, once the brain has been changed by addiction, most experts believe that the person loses control of their behavior. Choice does not determine whether something is a disease. Heart disease, diabetes, and some forms of cancer involve personal choices like diet, exercise, smoking, sun exposure, etc. A disease is what happens in the body as a result of those choices.
So are they saying that because those diseases or unhealthy situations in the body is caused by our actions, that they're not diseases?
Just like heart disease, diabetes, and some forms of cancer may involve personal choice, okay?
Right.
Like smoking, maybe contributed to lung cancer, too much sun exposure may contribute to skin cancer. Diet can contribute to things like heart disease and diabetes, or lack of exercise.
Mm-hmm.
But a disease is what happens in the body as a result of those choices. Okay,
to choose
to keep smoking, even though you know you may get lung cancer. So,
I was just curious because I'd never heard it described like that before. So, interesting.
Others argue that addiction is not a disease because some people with addiction get better without treatment. And they say people with a mild substance use disorder may recover with little or no treatment.
People with
the most serious forms of addiction, though, usually need intensive treatment, followed by lifelong management of the disease. However, some people with severe addiction do stop drinking or using drugs without treatment,
mm-hmm.
usually after experiencing a serious family, social, occupational, physical, or spiritual crisis. Others achieve sobriety by attending 12-step programs such as Alcoholics and Narcotics Anonymous meetings without receiving much, if any, professional treatment. And they said, because we do not understand why some people are able to stop on their own or through self-help meetings at certain points in their lives, people with addiction should always seek treatment. And some people would say, well, he used to drink real heavy and he just stopped. One day he just made up his mind he wasn't going to do it no more. And, that can happen.
Right.
What's more likely to happen is he's gonna go back to drinking at some point in time.
Not necessarily though. If the person's mind is truly made up on not doing, I've seen people who are just sloppy, lay out in the floor drunk, every weekend, mm-hmm. or when they weren't working, or on their way home from work every day, whatever it was. And they were able to stop without the intervention or the treatment from a medical professional. This may be one of those situations where they're using those words to say that you got to be in treatment in order to be successful. Well, I know just as many people that were not successful with treatment as they were those that were able to break their addiction either by going to the support groups or some other means like that other than professional help. And so because they what I know to be true is that most doctors will put somebody on some type of medication, and the medication is real similar to whatever their drug of choice was. Like cigarettes, they want to give you the patches, which to me were crazier than the cigarettes, or, they want to give you something, the opiates, is right. One thing, Yeah. So it's just interesting. Yep.
Get you off heroin and put you on methadone, which is just
it's
addictive.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're still keeping you addicted. You're just addicted to something else that they can write a prescription for.
Right. Exactly. So if the person can work through it and get support and get into the 12-step programs do have a good history of having helped a lot of people. Okay.
Yes.
Because it encourages the person to get real about, owning up to their responsibility for their recovery. That's really the first step. Is recognizing that their behavior or that substance use or whatever it is out of control, and admitting that they are powerless over it. Okay, that's the first step in AA or NA. Okay. All right, the spiritual side of addiction, alcoholism and recovery. I based this topic on a book by that name. It's called Blessed Are the Addicts, the Spiritual Side of Alcoholism, Addiction, and Recovery by John A. Martin. He was a Catholic priest who worked in the field of addiction for more than 20 years. And this is a book we used to use a lot in the Alcoholism Treatment Center where I worked. That's how I
became
familiar
with it. Give me his last name again, please.
John A. Martin. Martin.
Martin. Okay. Thank you.
Blessed Are the Addicts, the Spiritual Side of Alcoholism, Addiction, and Recovery.
Okay.
Now, the book is out of print currently, but I was able to go on Amazon and find some previously used copies that people wanted to sell. And that's how I was able to get a current copy of it. But when we when I worked at in the alcoholism treatment, this was kind of like our Bible, our textbook for that program, because this priest grew up as the child of an alcoholic himself. Okay.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then he went on to work with people in recovery for 20 years, and he describes addiction as a disconnection of the human spirit.
Mm. Okay.
He states, I believe that this disease is mostly due not to a sick body, a crazy mind, or a deficient set of feelings, but rather to a certain dysfunction, or more accurately, to a disconnection of the human spirit. He goes on
like
to say,
that.
I believe that the disease is spiritual and includes a physical and mental aspects, all parts of expressions of the spiritual phenomena at play. He says the beginning, the progression, the tragic end of this disease are at the core spiritual, directly causing the harmful consequences we witness in the mind and the body of the victim. And he refers to the spirit as our deep inner essence, which defines who we are and how we function in the world.
Hmm.
Okay. Father Martin himself, the son of an alcoholic, he witnessed firsthand the suffering caused by this disease.
Yeah.
He states, my mother and I hoped for the day when my father would stop drinking. In our way of thinking, his drinking was the problem. Our lives and his would be all right, he thought, if only he didn't drink. And he says, when he decided to stop drinking, he didn't stop being sick. And we didn't stop being fearful, distrusting, and worried.
Wow.
The booze was gone, but the alcoholism stayed and flourished.
Wow.
My father didn't know one happy day sober in his life.
Oh, man.
So he goes on to describe several characteristics present in the person suffering from addiction long before he or she discovers their drug of choice. And here they are. Number one is alienation from his or her peers or family. The person feels that he or she is different, less than, not as good or capable as others. And so he's talking about characteristics that we can see in childhood. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
One, alienation, feeling that they're different, less than, not as good or capable as others. Number two, embracing negativity and approaching most situations expecting a negative outcome.
Wow.
Number three, comparing, the feeling that others are most often doing better, have more, or happier than they. Thus, the person feels the need to constantly compete. Social awkwardness. He says, difficulty relating socially to others, only to be capable of loosening up once they have consumed their drug of choice, like the person in the club who becomes the life of the party only after beginning to drink. And we probably have seen that. That person might be standing over in the corner or sitting quietly at the bar, once they get a few drinks under their belt, then they're ready to party, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Trying to do away with that soap because they feel socially awkward. Number five, approval seeking. For lack of inner self-justification, the young addict constantly seeks approval from the outside. For that reason, he needs to excel in something and revels in the praise that results.
Wow.
It isn't rare in the history of addicts to find a model child. Yeah. The child's trying to do everything right, trying to excel, you know, trying to always get approval from somebody because he feels like in his mind he's done everything right. Number six, perfectionism. It is no wonder, he says, that the young addict either does nothing or does it to perfection. In fact, at the end of his progression, most addicts practically do nothing at all. They don't even attempt to do anything, knowing that they are incapable of making it perfect. And you may have seen this.
I wonder why that is.
People who have these big ideas, they say, well, I'm going to do this project. They got, you know, a really good idea. And they've got all the pieces to put together, and then they start working on it, and then they can't quite finish it, and then they start, you know, backing away from it as time goes on, and never do finish it because they just feel like, you know, well, it ain't gonna be just right, so just forget it. I've seen that.
Yeah, but I get so, go ahead and give your list because I wanted to ask a question, but I'll ask it after you finish with your list. Yeah.
Okay. Regret, recrimination, and blame. The addict many times is unable to move mentally beyond the adverse happenings of his or her past. Frequently, the encounters they have with others are colored by negative baggage from the past. He says that they're an overactive thinker. He says, in my experience, a characteristic of an addicted person is that of a thinker. Addicted people can't unplug. If only for a short time, they could put their brains in a deep freeze and just stop and get some respite from a brain that just won't stop thinking.
Wow.
He goes on to say that is why it is advisable never to get on the level of rationalization or argument with one of these people. You will be guaranteed to be frustrated in your verbal attempt to persuade. And I'm sure you've seen that.
Yes, ma'am.
They know everything. Mm-hmm. They got their idea is the best idea. You just don't tell them what's better because they already doing the best. You know, they already got the best, know the best. You know, sitting there just we call it delusions of grandeur. Everything they do is perfect and good, and everything anybody else do is just don't measure up. And also, he says, in my experience, this is most often the person who will play devil's advocate with you, as they are unable to empathize with others. You know, you come to them and you say, well, such and such happened to me. And the first thing they say is, well, you know, well, what did you do? How did you contribute to what happened to you? You know, they can't empathize with you. They're going to turn it around and make it look like something you did. Okay.
Yeah.
Father Martin gives the example of his mother having a piano growing up. She had a piano. It had been in her family for three generations. Her grandmother had passed it on down to her mother and taught her mother how to play it. And then her mother had passed it on down to her, taught her how to play it when she was a little girl. And she loved that piano. And she would enjoy it because he said the daddy would come home. The daddy was what they call a functioning alcoholic, okay? He went to work every day. He paid the bills, you know, kept a roof over their head, food in the fridge, and all of that. But you never knew what kind of mood you were going to find him in when he come home. So
right,
he was always
right.
always walking on pins and needles. He was very fault-finding, critical of others, and just, you know, nobody else could do anything right.
Mm-hmm.
So the daddy got it in his head that he wanted mama to get rid of that piano. You know, she would sit and play it, you know. If he would tell her to stop playing it, if he didn't want to hear it, she would stop. And most of the time, he said she wouldn't even play it around him because, you know, she didn't know what kind of mood he was going to be in, whether he was going to be annoyed by the sound of it. So most of the time, he just sat in the corner and nobody messed with it. But he suddenly one day got it in his head, well, just get rid of that piano. I'm just tired of looking at it. We could be happy if you just get rid of that piano. Get rid of it. Mm-hmm. And the mother was like, well, no, I don't want to get rid of it. So that was my grandmother. She passed it on down, and, you know, it's a cherished family heirloom. I don't want to get rid of my piano. Please, you need to get rid of that piano. I'm sick of it. I'm just sick of hearing it. So over time, he wore the mother down. He would say, we could all be happy if you just get rid of that piano. We could be happy as a family if you just get rid of that piano. So over time, he wore the mom down. Mom finally got rid of the piano, sold the piano. And he said she was so sad because, you know, she didn't want to get rid of it. He thought, you know, his promise of, you know, we can all be happy if you just get rid of that piano. She actually believed what he told her. And he said not one thing changed, okay, after the piano was gone. He was still just as hypercritical, belligerent sometimes, abusive physically, verbally, you know, not one thing changed. Except the mom was so sad and depressed of having gotten rid of her piano.
He just fixated
on it and just didn't want her to have it because that was something she enjoyed without him, I guess. You know.
It's unfortunate that, you know, that she gave in to him like that. You know what I'm saying? Because those were his behaviors, and so his behaviors did not change, but they caused other actions by the rest of the family to be taken. So that's interesting,
Yeah. He only stopped drinking, Martin says, when he got ready to leave for college. He actually got a scholarship, but he didn't want to go to college because he didn't want to leave the mom in the house with the daddy alone because he was an only child.
Okay.
And so the dad told him, say, if you take that scholarship, I'm going to stop drinking. I promise you, I'll stop drinking. And go ahead and take the scholarship. Because the scholarship allowed him to get a free education as opposed to the dad having to pay for it, right?
Right.
So the dad wanted him to accept the scholarship. And the school, he said, wasn't very far. He could still commute home on the weekend.
Okay.
So he went ahead and took the scholarship, and his dad did stop drinking.
Okay.
But that's when he said the dad still never had not one happy day sober. Okay. So the booze was gone, but the alcoholism stayed and flourished. That daddy still was not happy. Still remained hypercritical, fault-finding, you know, nitpicky, physically and mentally abusive to the mom, mostly mentally abusive to the mom because she, you know, had, I guess over the years had just gotten used to it, just taking it and not leaving. So.
Yeah, and it was tearing her up in that process as she was sitting there in that stuff, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's the life that can happen many times when an addicted person is a part of the family. The family will be terrorized many times, like he said, not knowing who coming home at the end of the day.
Right.
He gonna be
so now you gave us.
Go ahead.
You gave us seven traits, character traits or personality traits.
Right.
So. But you brought up some other points too, because I like that one about the being hypercritical and being mentally abusive. I think those are should be added onto that list as well. But we'll go with the seven that Father Martin notated in his book. And so my question, hopefully you'll, you know, we can have a dialogue if you don't know the direct answer, is, so is there a certain combination of these actions that indicate an addict? How many would of these seven traits would a person need in order to be considered an addict, or is it just one?
Well,
or
these are things going on with the person before they ever select what they call their drug of choice. Okay, before they ever take that first drink, before they ever use drugs, these are things he describes that's already going on with them. They're feeling alienated, you know, from the family. That they are very negative, embracing negativity and expecting situations to always have a negative out. So these are things that parents can be watching for with their children, comparing, the feeling that others are most often doing better, have more, or happier than they are, and the feeling the need to constantly compete. So see, these are the warning signs that parents can be on the lookout for before the child ever engages in any type of drug or alcohol use or develops some type of addictive behavior, addiction.
Right.
Social awkwardness, you know, difficulty relating socially to others. And see, the person like who's drinking in the club and then becomes the life of the party, that's definitely a warning sign, because alcohol really is a depressant. It should slow you down and, you know, make you want to go sit down. but if it peps you up and emboldens your spirit, you've seen people that become a totally different person once they start drinking. The life of the party, talking trash, talking, you know, smack loud and all that. When you see that personality change from somebody that's, you know, quiet and subdued and, you know, just kind of inverted, sitting in the corner kind of thing, and then they engage in that substance, and all of a sudden now you got the life of the party over here. Know that that's somebody whose brain is changed, whose brain activity is changed because of that.
Normally,
alcoholism is a depressant. Okay, take a couple of drinks and go lay down and go to sleep. You know, a lot of people, especially if they overdrink, they'll pass out on the couch. You know, I know if I have two glasses of wine, I'm done. I'm done for the night.
I really appreciate you bringing up the subject and going so into detail. Because these are definitely things that we can address as we see them appearing, or, you know, our youth living these character traits out, you know, sitting down having discussions with them. I think that that's actually a better, well, not better. I think that that's a most effective way to start having the conversation with young people early in life, and not waiting until, you know, they're fully engaged in the addictive behavior before we say anything to them, you know.
Right. And just keeping up with what's going on with our children all the time, you know, talking with them, having at least a once a week where we, you know, just sit down together and say, okay, what's going on? What's happening? You know, even if nothing is wrong, it's a good idea to check in. You know, once a week to have a family discussion. Okay, how's things going at school? What's been happening? Let me know what you've been up to this week. You know, sometimes parents just lose track of checking in with their children. They don't really know what's going on with them, and that's how sometimes parents will say, "Well, I didn't know he did that, or I didn't know he had this person as a friend. I didn't know he was, spending this much time on the internet and done met a predator. You know, I didn't know he was, you know, hanging around this group of kids and they robbed a store, you know. They really haven't been checking in with them to see, you know, who are you associating with? Who are you spending time online with? You know, nowadays the predator can be right there on the phone.
Exactly.
We were coming up, you know, we had to physically meet somebody somewhere. Nowadays, you just meet somebody who can lure you away and kill you even. You know, met online. So parents need to be checking in with what is going on all the time. You know, what are they listening to? Who are they listening to? You know.
What kind of
people are they associating with, and what things are they planning to do, and finding out too, what are your future plans, you know, with kids? What do you want to do with your life? What are you working for? Because don't get in almost graduate school and then try to figure out what career path you're going to be on when you get to be a senior. They have done that way, way early. So nowadays you have to prepare years before for a career that you might want to pursue at some point in time. So that's why it's important to just, keep close, have good conversations, you know, cook together or in some way, you know, spend time together, even if it's just recreationally. You know, take that opportunity to say, okay, let's go hiking, you and I, or let's go walking. And, that'll give, and you don't even have to say, well, because I want to talk to you, you know.
Just
go out and take a walk. And then, so what's happening with you? What's going on?
You got
a little boyfriend, got a little girlfriend, you know. Rather than, you know, I didn't even know she was doing that, and now she's pregnant, you know.
So
many things get away, you know, from us if we don't pay attention to what's going on, especially as fast as things move now. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I like that you took it from the perspective of John Martin and his book, because he's already lived it and documented it in the book.
Right.
So that, you know, you don't necessarily have to have that same experience to be able to draw from his knowledge. And so I really, really appreciate that. And I think that this would be the best, one of the best tools that we can use as we are dealing with some things that we're not really accustomed to, you know, like, some of this, the addictive behavior may be exaggerated or brought on by the isolation and the pandemic and all of that, you know, because kids really suffered quite a bit, you know, on very extreme sides of the totem pole. And so that could be a real valuable tool to use, you know, look at those seven character traits that Harriet just spoke about, that John Martin wrote about in his book, Blessed Are the Addicts, and be able to write them down and go back and refer to them, or if you can do that and you can remember the seven different character traits, then by all means do that. But use it as a way to help monitor what's going on with the young people. They don't have to be your children. They don't have to be your grandchildren. They don't have to be even related to you. But help if you see, if the situation presents itself to you, then you have these tools to be able to sit down and have a conversation. And perhaps you're stopping one person from becoming addicted to something.
Right. And don't be ashamed or afraid to reach out for help if at any time, because we all need it from time to time. And it's no shame in saying, hey, especially with the pandemic. You know, there's been so many people that felt isolated, that, you know, started drinking. As a matter of fact, drinking and drug use increased substantially during the pandemic. People couldn't get out. They couldn't attend meetings or couldn't pursue, you know, their normal activities. They became more depressed, overwhelmed, not knowing how to navigate, you know, being safe as well as trying to work. So a lot of people who hadn't drank or done drugs in years actually relapsed.
Because their socialization was taken away from them, you know.
Right.
And for a lot of people, the phone don't hit it. You know what I'm saying? Like, you need to be in the presence of other living human beings, you know. So I can see that. I really can see that being very, very real in a lot of people's lives, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Well, we're running up against some time right now, but I wanted to just go over a few of the steps that have been published in the Big Blue Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a guide for the steps required to begin a path of recovery. And step one was, we admitted that we were powerless over alcohol or drugs and that our lives have become unmanageable. And that's the first step. Admit that, hey, this is out of control and I need help, okay? Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Number three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand him or her. And we used to tell the addicts, the only thing you have to know about God or Goddess is that it's not you. Okay. That's the only thing you have to know. It's not you. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. You know, frankly, just, you know, look in the mirror and say, okay, what's really going on with me? Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrong. And many times that's very difficult to actually admit, you know, that we were wrong or that we've been doing people wrong. Number six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly ask him or her to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we have harmed and became willing to make amends to them. And that's a tough one, too.
Right.
A list of the person that they've harmed and made amends and became willing to make amends to them. And number nine, may direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Yeah, so go to them, you know, might be years ago that, you know, something happened that you might go to that person and say, well, hey, I'm sorry that I, you know, stole $100 from you way back when. And here's your money, okay? Make amends for the wrong that we've done. Number 10, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admit it. Number 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God or Goddess as we understand him or her. Praying for knowledge of his or her will for us and the power to carry that out. So again, this is number 12, having a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics or drug addicts and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. So, that, you know, to reach back and help others carry this message to others and to practice these principles in all of their affairs. So it requires really a change in our thinking. And the emphasis is placed on addressing the spiritual components of this disease by spiritual remedies.
Mm-hmm.
It may be difficult for those who are agnostic or who deny the existence of a spiritual being. But in treatment, like I said, we would often say the only thing you have to know about God is that he or she is not you.
Mm-hmm.
Not. But some of them do have quite a narcissistic personality. Got all the answers, know all the, can't be told nothing by nobody else. So narcissism is a feature of addiction as well. Just me, first, me first, nobody second. Okay.
That's interesting. But you're right. You're absolutely.
That's the narcissist motto. Me first, nobody second. Nobody second.
Yep. Yep.
So
well, I have early.
We need to wrap this up then. Go ahead.
No, I need for you to go ahead.
Okay.
No, I'm
so
just,
while we feel I came to meet a lot of people who remain clean and sober for many years. In fact, most of the staff members who worked in the center were people who were in recovery. This was very appropriate, as it takes one to know one, as the saying goes. But their motto was always one day at a time is how it worked for them. Many of them still attended AA or NA meetings. They practiced the principles of the Big Blue Book, and they acted as sponsors or peer supporters for other people seeking recovery.
Right.
And again, they refer to their sobriety as being in recovery as opposed to recovered, as they realize that this is an ongoing process. But practicing complete honesty, first with themselves and with others, is the key to remaining in recovery. Okay. And there's other 12 programs like Overeaters Anonymous, Gambling Anonymous, Sex Addicts Anonymous. There's lots of different 12-step programs for the different addictive behaviors that people might have.
Right. So let's provide your contact information to the audience. We've got about a minute left.
All right. They can email me at H. Harris. That's Harriet Harris. H. Harris 257 at AOL.com. They can take a look at my website. That's The Circle, The Circle of Support.org. I do life coaching in addition to just being a person who is interested in hearing people's stories. Many times I just enjoy talking to people and, you know, just having people call me up and ask me, you know, about my years of nursing experience and some of the things I've learned. So I'm retired from clinical nursing now, but I love to talk. So you can always email me.
And you're so free to share information with us. And I bless you and thank you so much for always being so willing to step up. So once again, you guys, that's hharris257 at AOL.com. And the website is thecircleofsupport.org. We're right at the wire here. And I tell you, I have learned so much and have taken so many notes. And I hope that this has impacted you in a way that you can have these conversations with some of the younger people that you are around. And perhaps, you know, you guys can get that discussion going and change some lives. So thank you once again, Nurse Harriet. I certainly appreciate you. And thank you, audience, for being a part with us tonight. And remember, I am Sandy Rogers, and I thank you for listening, for participating, and sorry that we did not have an opportunity to open up. But remember, it's all about life. It's all about love. It's all about wellness. And so until next week, stay safe, remain blessed, and we will have our last show on addictions next Tuesday. So come with your questions from any of the presenters that have spoken this month, and we'll see if we can't get into some general understanding of what of a way to answer your question or your concern that you may have. All right, I'm out. I thank you. We'll see you next week, everybody. Same time.